Borjofsky here, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Good to be with you, friends. It is Friday, the 7th of February, and what a week it has been. Trump is a man on fire, and I mean that only in a good way. So, given that I'm a lawyer, and I have to, on occasion, give a shout out to the greats of our profession. I will bring back the words of the one and only, truly immortal, Johnny Cochran. If you can't impeach, rip up the speech. No, wait, that was not what he said. I just thought, my gosh, I was not watching the speech this year in real time. I was in a dinner meeting, and I had set my DVR to record it, and so I was away from the from kind of real time perceiving of it, and my phone began blowing up, and everybody expects me, right, to be, well, at the leading edge of every current event as it's happening. Friends, I have a life. I got work to do. I have a day job, so I was engaged in commercial activity, meeting with some clients. And anyway, I got your text. I got him. I heard you, but nobody told me what was going on. Oh my! Can you imagine what Pelosi did? Unbelievable! And the very first thing that I noticed about these texts that were coming through was that they were not coming from my usual Politico. You know, the people that are, you know, Trumpists or otherwise, they were coming from my somewhat apolitical friends. And a word, I guess, was spreading rapidly. I was the last to know that Pelosi had ripped the speech up as soon as Trump was done delivering it. And so I had to catch up on it. Lickety split. Here is now, if my take on this, of course, is that Pelosi, it's in line with what she's been doing. You have to understand it through her eyes. It was certainly premeditated, right? We've seen pictures that the pages were pre-torn, that she was getting ready to tear up the speech well before it ended. So it wasn't a spontaneous moment. So you've got to view it through a lens of what's she thinking, why is she doing it, and it's pandering. It's pandering, but it's so clumsy. My thinking on all of this, if there was a broad strategy to impeachment, if it was part of a plan to thwart efforts within the Democratic Party to nominate insurgent candidates in congressional races, in districts where incumbent Democrats who are reliable allies of Speaker Pelosi could potentially be unseated. If it was an effort to thwart those races, if that was a grand plan, fine, okay, be it. This here is so clumsy and tone deaf and unnecessary. She's already wearing the damn white suit. She's already signaling to everybody what a suffragette she is. And so Pelosi overplayed this, and in so doing did not realize she's so worried about, I'm telling you, she's so worried about catering to AOC and her insipid minions that she forgot the rest of her party. It's always the silent majority. This is the rule. It's always the quiet people out there that matter. So right after the speech, CNN had some call-ins, and they, you know, they've got C-SPAN. Sorry. Whoops. C-SPAN had some call-ins, and, you know, they do the two lines. They've got the Republican line, and they've got the Democrat line. So here is a little taste of what the Democratic caller sounded like after the speech.
I am literally disgusted with Pelosi and the Democrats' behavior, the way she teared up his speech behind him. I was a registered Democrat. I have gone independent. I'm leaning GOP now.
I've been a Democrat for 70-something years. And what I've seen tonight of the Democrat Party, I am changing my mind. I mean, I'll probably still be a Democrat. But far as I'm electing for a goddamn Democrat, never again.
I am a Democrat as well, but no longer will I vote Democrat. I think it's outrageous that they sat there when all these good things are happening to our country and how much we love our country, and they looked like they hated our country. And I'm sick of it, and my whole family feels the same way.
With a simple rip of a paper, Nancy Pelosi has pretty much sealed the deal of a reelection of Donald Trump.
This, by the way, if Nancy thinks this was her own choice, I mean, yes, of course, you controlled her hands as they ripped the paper. But this, to me, was the clearest example of how Trump undoes his enemies. You see, Trump would never do that in the reverse. And I know you talk to a Trump hater and they think, well, what civility? Trump has thrown civility out the window. Trump is the one who's lowered the bar. I mean, Nancy and everybody else, they're just following the new rules that he set forth. And this is absolutely not the case. Because, yes, Trump is not civil. Trump is not a well-behaved Republican in the mold of Mitt Romney and John McCain and the other losers that have come before him. He is not that guy. Trump is boisterous and at times quite rude. But his ire, his venom, his spittle is always being projected in the direction of a boogeyman. And the boogeyman could be AOC, could be Nancy Pelosi, could be socialists in general, illegal aliens. He has that thing where he will direct his attacks, but not ever, and this is really important, not ever at the American people. And Trump loaded that speech full of great uplifting messages. He loaded that speech full of, well, frankly, tributes to great people like that 100-plus-year-old gentleman who was a Tuskegee Airman and a veteran of three wars. He loaded it full of struggles of common people. He had a guy who had been through all sorts of drug problems and had found finally gainful employment, buoyed up by the Trump economy. He had a mother and a daughter who could not get into a charter school because of the crazy things the left has been doing to obstruct state efforts to bring about meaningful school choice. It went on and on and on. And so Nancy, when she rips up this speech, she's not just ripping up Trump's words. She is actually setting fire to certain fabrical components of the American dream. And this is perceived by these regular people that are calling in C-SPAN and flipping out. It's perceived as an attack on them. People are going, well, wait a minute. Okay, all right, I get it. You don't like that guy. He's orange man. He's bad, you know, and he's tweets too much. But, this is important. I like some of the things that he's saying. So it's the same thing as when Hillary busted out her deplorable comment. Nothing could have been more stupid. People are saying Buttigieg, he's surging. He's going to kill it. He's going to come in. He's the real threat to Trump. And I keep saying, no, he's not. He's not going to succeed at this. He's not going to be a transformational candidate because he's still out there calling Trump supporters racist. He doesn't get it. for all of his book smarts, he's a freaking idiot. Yang's the guy that gets it on the left. He gets it. Yeah, you heard he had a town hall in Iowa or a campaign meeting, whatever it was. And he asked people to stand up or raise their hands if they voted for Trump in the last election. And can you imagine, right? A very timid group of Iowan Democrats. Oh, yeah, me. I did. So, you know, two people or whatever raised their hands. Bet you there were a lot more in that crowd, by the way. And did Yang shun them? No. You know what he did? Did you hear this? He instructed the rest of the group, the crowd, to stand up and applaud these people, and said that we are with you, and we get it, and you may have made the right decision in 2016. There's nothing to be ashamed of, and you voted for Trump for some very good reasons. You're not hearing that anywhere in the Democratic Party. And I'll tell you, people do not like to get attacked. It's true in radio, too. I was listening to a show. Oh, my gosh. There's some great radio here in Vegas, and there's some bad radio, too. I was listening to a show. I'm not going to name any names. But, I mean, the host was just attacking caller after caller after. I mean, and calling him stupid and things like I'm listening to it and I'm going, you know, I feel like I agreed with that caller. The host just called him stupid. And now I'm feeling put out a little bit, and I'm a big boy. So I can't imagine how that's perceived by the public. Very bad politicking. This was perhaps one of Nancy Pelosi's biggest faux pas and missteps in her career. And just last week, I was telling you that she's a smart cookie. She's losing it. This was absolute weak sauce. Okay, more on this when we come back. Some general observations and getting into the specifics of the race for the Democratic nomination. What is that TV show about? The weight loss show, America's Biggest Loser or something? Well, that's what, just think of it. That is what this is all about. It is a race to find the person that loses to Trump. Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this. Hi, it's Sam.
Hey, it's Ash, and we're Sam and Ash, your personal injury attorneys.
If you've been injured in an accident, don't talk to an insurance agent or claims adjuster. Talk to us.
Look, the insurance company's job is to deny your injuries, and that's because paying you what's fair costs them money.
We will get you the compensation you deserve. It's what's right.
So visit us at samandash.com.
Samandash.com. Sam and Ash.
Because you deserve what's right.
The State of the Union close, you know, the last paragraph of Trump's speech, I thought was extremely good. I liked it a lot. And it's important I say this because it was this paragraph that came right before the Pelosi shred. And you tell me, take Trump away, just a little exercise, remove Trump's name and voice from this. Take just these words and tell me if you want to see this ripped up. We'll have Trump use his words so you know exactly how it sounded. Here is how the speech ended.
America is the place where anything can happen. America is the place where anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true. This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited frontiers just waiting to be explored. Our brightest discoveries are not yet known. Our most thrilling stories are not yet told. Our grandest journeys are not yet made. the American age, the American epic, the American adventure has only just begun. Our spirit is still young. The sun is still rising. God's grace is still shining. And my fellow Americans, the best is yet to come. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless America. Thank you very much.
Rip it up! Rip it up! That's terrible! This is so stupid. I mean, what a silly move. Now, I'll add another important layer to this. We all enjoy what's left of our friendships with people who disagree with us. Now, I laugh because hasn't it been hard? I mean, it's been hard maintaining these relationships, especially when good friends, family members in some cases, start calling us names and telling us that we're racist because maybe, you know, gosh forbid, we like what Trump is doing. So, but of the relationships that we still maintain, there's something I want to point out that's interesting to me. And I had a colleague, a friend here in town who I really like. I really respect him. And he's just a phenomenal radio guy. And politically, he is, he is liberal. And I would put him, I'll just tell you, he's a Bernie guy. And the observation, I had a long conversation with him earlier this week, I think on Tuesday, where I realized how depressing it is to be a Democrat. And I don't mean depressing in the sense that, yeah, sure, this field of candidates is depressing and Trump is winning all over you. And so, yeah, that is depressing. But I mean liberalism and socialism is in and of itself a pursuit of depressive thought. And I'll explain this. Everywhere my friend looks, it's bad news. He sees this economy. Yes, there's good, but oh my goodness, the sky is falling. The audit. Oh, forget these numbers are all lies. There's leaving people behind. People are underemployed because of the gig economy. I'm thinking to myself, oh boy, have you seen what they're doing to the gig economy in California? They're destroying. They're literally ruining people's livelihoods in an effort to, quote unquote, help the poor exploited workers in the gig economy. Oh, you know, I just kept quiet. I was listening. So he goes on and he starts talking to me about, oh, it's the automation. It's the automation. You know, people are going to be automated out of their jobs. And I just think to myself, I think, you know, well, we've been through this. There was an industrial revolution. Machines came along and indeed took the work of many laborers. But these things sorted themselves out. I try to explain to him, there cannot be an economy that has all billionaires. Who's the consumer class? It doesn't work. And his point is exactly. We've got to break down these billionaires so we still have a middle class. Like, it doesn't work. You have the middle class because you have billionaires. Because there is a need for skilled labor. And there will always be a need for skills. And so he goes, oh, well, the machines are going to fix themselves. I go, well, who's going to sell the machines? I came to a realization in this conversation that has taken me 39 years to get to. And that is that I'm an optimist. I'm just an optimistic guy. I was an optimist, if you listen to me back in the day, when Obama was president. I didn't let, you know, people would come to me and many people on our side of the aisle and say, oh, it's over. It's terrible. He's destroyed America, like past tense, destroyed America. And I would always just kind of take a breath and I would say, no, I mean, I mean, Obamacare is not a good thing and what he's doing in the world is terrible. And yes, I got it. But this country is a great country. This country is resilient. This country will survive it. The future is bright. In fact, I would say a lot of the things that Trump put into the close of his State of the Union. So for all the leftists out there, the true dedicated Democrat socialists, they see the world very bleakly. And their only answer is that government has to come in and fix it. And I have to tell you, the reason I am a conservative, the reason you are a conservative, the reason that we believe what we believe is because we could not disagree with that more. We understand, as Trump the other night at the State of the Union with a bunch of sourpuss Democrats with their arms folded sat mute in the audience, Trump articulated exactly what it is to be an American, to be a positive thinking, forward thinking, can-do person, and that it is the role of government to provide the sandbox where all these good things happen. But just the sandbox, just some, you know, hey, here's a line, here's this, and you do the rest. You want a school for your kid. He said government schools. I loved it, by the way. That was terrific. Finally, somebody, it's not public school, it's government school. Damn right. The idea of letting us decide. And I, you know, what you and I can do, we don't need Bernie Sanders to level the playing field. We need government to get the hell out of our way so we can work hard, feed our families, and make year over year growth and gains and succeed. And that is why we are who we are. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Rogowski making radio great again. Good morning still. Happy Friday. And for those of you who only come to Las Vegas in the summertime to come party and live La Vida Loca, let me tell you, it is the frozen freaking tundra here. This week has been, I'll just tell you, my money is frostbitten. And it's so deceiving because you wake up and it's sunny outside and beautiful. And there's, of course, no snow on the ground. I walk out of my place and bam, it's 35 degrees. I don't know. I people tell me summer's going to be terrible. And I don't know. I don't know what I think I'm going to prefer the buck 15 a dry heat than I am this 35 degrees of and then, oh, the wind. Let me tell you. So you go around a corner somewhere if you're by a building and you go and the wind comes around the corner and whew, just sucks the life out of you. Anyway, so I just as a matter of public announcement here, am definitely looking forward to pool season. Let me tell you about the race for the Democratic nomination. Iowa, I know the jokes, right? The Iowa caucuses, where they go around and, you know, a few thousand people just, you know, pick who the nominee is and give momentum to a certain candidate. It is what you saw. Look, this is what happens when Democrats are in charge of something. Do you remember the $5 billion Obamacare website? I mean, you give political Democrats an opportunity to build an app. By the way, right, the Bernie people, they and these Democratic socialists, they don't want to. They fear automation, right? They fear modernism. They fear progress because it will displace workers. But sure, by all means, let's create an app to do something that we've been doing a certain way, referring now to the Iowa caucus, and that will make everything better. Lo and behold, it did not work. Like everything that the Democrats do and touch fell apart. But I believe, I'll put a finer conspiratorial point on this, but I just think this whole thing stinks to high heaven. Buttigieg, we've learned, came in first, not in the popular vote, but he came in first in terms of delegates. And so he of course, has been the recipient of a great deal of momentum. And that now is going, of course, into New Hampshire, where, you know, now it starts to things start to pick up steam. We still don't exactly know what the votes are. They haven't exactly been tallied. They have, you know, but it is just a mess. And I'm looking at this, and all I think it tells me is that there really is not a clear front runner. Like, there's not somebody right now that the Democrats are in any way, shape, or form coalescing behind. Do not, friends, do not mistake flavor of the week for momentum and for some kind of consolidation. I don't think Biden is out. I think that he still has some chance. Sanders is the front runner. He is. But there's this enormous contingent body of Democrats that do not want Sanders. And then there's a body of Democrats that want Sanders and don't want any other candidate. And so betting odds, following the betting odds, still has Sanders strong. Bloomberg is the one who soared, but only a few points ahead, percentage points ahead of Biden. By the way, speaking of the betting odds, they now have Trump at 59%. I'm telling you that is a sign that things are going well. And to that extent, it is exactly fair to describe the Democratic nomination right now as a race to the bottom. The ship has struck an iceberg. and guess what? We need a captain. Give me a captain. We got it. And, oh, yes, you're going down with the ship, buddy. That's it. That's what you're signing up for. But you're going to get, what, 7 months of Secret Service protection. You get to fly around on a PJ. That's private jet for those of you not in the know. And you get to be very important. What else? You get recognition for the next round. Sure. But you know, that exposure didn't exactly help Hillary Clinton. I mean, and I would argue didn't help Romney. It's not like Romney, after losing to Obama, the race he should have won. I mean, if we had run Trump back then. Well, I don't know. That's a big if. But if we had run, I don't know. That's a classic example of how losing something does not exactly translate into then having a stronger brand coming out of it. And that's why Romney had to tuck his tails between his legs and go be a traitor in Utah. Sam Rejofsky. Yes, I will get more. This is really important. I got some great points after this. Van Jones, believe it or not, Van Jones from CNN may be the only person who gets what's going on. Don't go anywhere. I'm back after this. Hi, it's Sam.
Hey, it's Ash, and we're Sam and Ash, your personal injury attorneys.
An accident is incredibly stressful. Handling an insurance claim totally overwhelming.
Also, insurance companies have zero interest in giving their money to you because that just cuts into their profits.
Our team is in your corner because you deserve what's right, and that's full compensation for your injuries.
So visit us 24/7 at samandash.com.
Sam and Ash.
Because you deserve what's right.
I actually heard, I want to attribute it to Sheila Jackson Lee, who's one of the more demented members of Congress. It may be unfair. It may not have been her, but I heard it attributed that she was already blaming the Russians for having interfered with the Iowa caucuses. You cannot make this up. Mankind has, over our history, we have made up all sorts of stories to make us feel better and to explain the unexplainable. I'm not trying to start a religious debate here with anyone. I'm just saying that's something that we do. And for all of their criticism and loathing of religion, the Democrats are the most guilty of this right now, that they have created in their minds the storyline that the Russians interfered with the election in 2016 and gave us Donald Trump. That Donald Trump is a creation not of a desire of the electorate for change, but rather some foreign interference. And it's because they cannot come to terms with, you and I, we know this, they cannot come to terms with the fact that nobody wanted the crap that they were peddling. Nobody wanted more of Obama. We liked, I guess we liked the guy. He was well-spoken and whatnot. But at the end of the day, his policies, no thanks. So occasionally, there are some people that get it. Bill Maher, when, for example, he's Maher, however you pronounce his name. He's on HBO. He gets it. He's a Democrat that gets it. My gosh, even who's the fat guy? Does the movies? Thank you, Michael Moore. He, it's funny. You knew exactly what I was talking about. So there you go. It worked. Yeah, he gets it from time to time. Now, Van Jones, you know who this guy is? I mean, he was the guy that after the election, Trump got elected, and he said, he goes, it's a whitewash. Now, I remember we played this at the time. Whitelash, excuse me. Right. Important distinction. Meaning this is, you know, some sort of a racial reaction by the white now minority of the country that is looking to take back. I don't know, somehow the conversation away from multiculturalism and toward, you know, I guess the 1950s. When we played it, I remember this vividly because we played this in 2017 after, you know, after as we were dissecting the election. And we had a lot of fun with it here on the program. And I can't believe I'm saying this 3 years later. 3 years later, I actually have to give Van Jones credit for at least having a thought about this election that was based on what on something that was actually real going on in the country, whether he's right or wrong. That's irrelevant, right, for this purpose. At least he wasn't trying to explain it away by saying the Russians did it. And so it is this same Van Jones that now after this speech has actually said some interesting things. And one of the most interesting things, Van Jones, if you don't know this, he is himself black. So he was speaking about specifically Trump's appeal to African-American voters. And he said this.
What he was saying to African-Americans can be effective. You may not like it, but he mentioned HBCUs. Our black colleges have been struggling for a long time. A bunch of them have gone under. He threw a lifeline to them. In real life, in his budget, he talked about that. He talked about the criminal justice reform. He talked about opportunity zones.
This, school choice. He talked about school choice.
Listen, we got to wake up, folks. There's a whole bubble thing that goes on. We say, well, he said S-hole nations, therefore all black people are going to hate him forever. That ain't necessarily so. And I think what you're going to see him do is say, you may not like my rhetoric, but look at my results. Look at my record to black people. And if he narrow casts that, it's going to be effective.
Yes, exactly right. And not it's an if he narrow casts it. He is doing it. You're watching him do it in real time. But for those people that are on the left and who are, you know, think that we should nationalize all industry and turn Google into the post office, I don't know, whatever. These people are so lost in their fantasy land that they're not seeing what Trump is doing. And he is literally stealing the Democratic Party away from the Democrats. Play the C-SPAN clip again. Play it.
I am literally disgusted with Pelosi and the Democrats' behavior, the way she teared up his speech behind him. I was a registered Democrat. I have gone independent. I'm leaning GOP now.
I've been a Democrat for 70-something years. And what I've seen tonight of the Democrat Party, I am changing my mind. I mean, I'll probably still be a Democrat. But as far as I'm electing for a goddamn Democrat, never again.
I am a Democrat.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you hear this. This is epic. And so as we talk about the race for nominee of the Democratic Party, I don't know if there's going to be a party left come November. Buttigieg. Oh, I'll tell you something about it. We come back. Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Berjofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Point something out very important about Buttigieg. Carville, you know, James Carville, he's a Clinton strategist, a very important guy in the Democratic Party circles. What do they call him? The Raging Cajun. And Carville said that Mayor Pete's greatest problem is going to be winning over the black vote. Now, I think this is interesting. And I agree, and Carville doesn't get into this in this interview that he did with Vox. He glosses over it. But you've got Trump out there, as you just heard, Van Jones even admitting that he is specifically presenting a value proposition to African-American voters and saying, not just don't take my word for it. Maybe you don't like what I say, but look at what I've done for you. This economy has lifted you up in ways that Obama and Bush and even Clinton failed to provide you. So on the flip side of it, if you end up with a candidate, Mayor Pete, you've got a guy that literally his only record, political record, is being mayor of South Bend, Indiana. And I have to say, in that tenure, this guy bulldozed more homes of poor people of color than any of his predecessors, than many mayors that have, let's say, inner cities within their control. And this is going to come back and haunt him. He's a business consultant candidate, and he is glib, and he's got a silver tongue, and he's maybe one of the smartest of the field out there, but he absolutely is not going to win over the core, and the Republicans, the GOP, 95% support Trump. They're not going anywhere. So when we look at this, we've got a Democratic Party. 3 years later, we were told that, oh my gosh, the Republican Party is over. Trump has irreparably fractured it. And what I have witnessed in the last 3 years is quite the opposite. I've recognized that Trump has unified the Republican Party on the fringes of the Republican Party. The Never Trump movement. And you've got people like Romney. And a few others, right, that are not on board. But by and large, Trump has consolidated and unify the Republican Party. Meanwhile, the Democrats are in total disarray, and they're very much broken up into factions. And I think to that point, I think the Democrats are a lot better at unifying Republicans than themselves. Okay, now before we conclude this program, I want to take a few minutes here. Producer Robbie, we're going to disregard the clock because I want to talk about something. This State of the Union for me will be very memorable and probably will end up being the most memorable State of the Union speech that I will ever witness. And that is because Trump took a moment to honor Rush Limbaugh with the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which it was just clearly something that Rush was not expecting. Now, let me take you back in this a little bit. So you've probably already heard that Rush on Monday, earlier this week, he came out and he told us that he had an advanced stage of lung cancer and would be taking time away from the show as needed to treat his condition. Now, I mean, this news has just shaken me to my core. I will tell you that for me and for my generation of, we'll say, younger conservatives, we came of age listening to Rush. And Rush, maybe he doesn't know it, but he is my mentor. I mean, when it comes to radio, he is the man and the guy who has. But it's not just radio. It's not just showing us conservatives that are in the radio field how to do a show the right way. But he's also just been the guy who has led this movement in a way that, well, it's just he's the guy who took this movement away from the intellectuals. Before Rush, it was an ivory tower pursuit. It was something that, and no knock on William Buckley, but it was something that was discussed. Conservatism, neoconservatism was talked about in the backseats of limousines and in maisonette apartments on Fifth Avenue. And Rush made conservatism digestible and real to many, many Americans, and frankly, to me as a kid. So I grew up listening to Rush, and I definitely consider myself to have been touched by his body of work. And I still remember, in junior high, I was carrying around one of Rush's books. I think it was See, I Told You So. I was in junior high, and I brought it into class, and I had a teacher look at me and say, "Oh, you're reading that book. And I found out later that she was actually a closeted fan. But of course, if you're a government school teacher anywhere, but even in Orange County, California, you cannot openly admit that you listen to and like Rush Limbaugh. And so I had that distinct memory. And I listened to him before that. So I think even in elementary school. So for me, this is tremendously awful news. And I obviously hope that he is able to beat this thing. Cancer is awful. It is indiscriminate. And it strikes when you're not expecting it. So I've been bowled over by this and hope that Rush is able to get the best of it. If anyone can do it, he can. So we are sending our positive Sam Nation best wishes to Rush and to his whole team. I know they're all reeling from this. And so when I watched the State of the Union, his wife Catherine was with him, and you just tell what an emotional train wreck these past couple of weeks have been for her. And she was really wearing it on her face. And that moment when he was awarded the medal, and you know, he had Melania, the First Lady, give it to him right then and there. And I believe this is because, you know, Rush had to head back and immediately get to treatment. So there was no, you know, no dilly dallying. I mean, he came in for the speech. He was an invited guest of the president, sat next to the first lady, which is the most, the place of the highest honor during the speech. And was the greeting that Rush got from the gallery, not too many Democrats, but what he got from the gallery from and from down below from senators and congressmen was just was, I'll describe it as raucous. And it was extremely moving and a powerful moment for me that I will never forget. All right. Let's have a great week. And just such a pleasure to be here with you, as always. And I believe next week, I will have a little announcement for you all that you may find heartening as it relates to this program moving forward. So good news, I promise. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.